This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 190 of Internet Marketing, brought to you, he says, through his teeth, by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. Hello, Kelvin.
Hello, Andy. Did you forget where you were for a second there?
I just started whistling for some bizarre reason through my teeth. Part two of the incredibly complicated named psychological approaches to marketing.
Yeah, so it's mind tricks. So basically, this is about kind of patterns and trends that science of various types, so economics, sociology, psychology, have discovered, that I think it's worth at least beginning to talk about the ideas. And I'm going to give real quick rundowns on them here because I'm trying to do like a chunk of them in a relatively short episode. But what I hope you'll do is you'll find them interesting, go off, look them up on Wikipedia and learn a little bit more about how you can apply them to your business. Now, the first of these is kind of knowledge bias. And this is the... So a lot of these are biases, so where we do things that are perhaps a little bit irrational. And this is the tendency of people to choose an option that they know the best rather than the best option. So this is all about kind of familiarity. And we've all been there, and kind of this is kind of a lot where, Andy's kind of quite a healthy eater, but like I myself quite often, if I'm...
Where did you get that
idea?
Are
you quite a healthy trim guy? You do a bit of exercise, that type of thing?
Trim?
Yeah.
Actually, I am a bit trimmer, but yeah. Well, that's a different story.
Okay.
Yes.
But anyway, so imagine you're kind of in a new city, you'll have to try and find somewhere to eat, and often you'll go, well, let's go for the Starbucks coffee, or let's go for the McDonald's lunch, or whatever it is, rather than potentially taking a risk on product placement. If anyone wants any product placement,
charge them for that.
But you know, it's the tendency where people kind of go, well, which am I most familiar with than what's the best? And I kind of do this a lot, is that actually I think I probably prefer the taste of Pepsi to Diet Coke, but I always have Diet Coke because that's what I've always have, and kind of, you know, it's a familiarity thing. And you know, as a business, this is why branding works. This is why television advertising is really, really effective, right? Because often you might not be the most competitive on price. You might not have the best customer service. But if you are the most familiar, you can sometimes outpunch, you know, punch above your weight than you otherwise would. And that's down to knowledge bias. So have a look into knowledge bias, and it can make a pretty good justification for investing in branding and television as well. We also get the idea of post-purchase rationalization. So this is the tendency to persuade oneself through rational arguments that a purchase was good value after you've made it. And I kind of often talk about this as the Apple TV effect in my case. So I purchased an Apple TV and I'm now convinced it was a really sensible purchase.
Even though everyone's telling you it was a really rubbish purchase.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm really happy with it. But it's kind of, it's a tendency, it's a bias that people have, is that once they've purchased something, they tend to think they made a better decision than they perhaps did. And this is where you get fanboys, this is where you get people defending products. So it's a kind of understanding that as long as you can kind of get someone over that line, they'll often remember you and think they made a better decision than they perhaps did. And this can kind of be really good when you're trying to build advocacy and this type of thing. So bear in mind that the way that people respond and the way they think about their decision is often very different from actually how it was and the truth of the matter. So that's post-purchase rationalisation. Next up, we've got the pseudo-certainty effect. And that's the tendency to make risk-averse choices if the expected outcome is positive, but make risk-seeking choices to avoid negative outcomes, right? So if you're faced with a decision that is so you win something, you know, where there's a positive outcome, people tend to take less risky choices. So if I'm to say to you, Andy, you know, it's a 50-50 bet, you win, you know, £10, or a 1 in 100 bet that you'll win £1,000, because it's a positive, people tend to err towards the lower risk one.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's the opposite decision, which is, Andy, you need to give me a tenner, you know, same odds, so essentially the same kind of, you know, certainty and likelihood. If I were to say to you, Andy, you know, one in 10 chance you give me a tenner, you know, 1 in 1,000 chance you give me £1,000, you'll probably then go, actually, I'll go for the lot less certain one, but potentially a lot more risky, you know, it's more risky because the, you know, financial outlay is when it's a negative thing. So that's worth thinking if you're kind of, you know, first of all, try and, you know, when you're choice architecture, when you're setting up discounts, setting up, you know, contracts, setting up relationships, that if people are getting something, they're risk averse. if they're potentially losing something, they are prepared to make far more risky decisions as a consequence of that, given all things being equal. So worth thinking about that. And that is the pseudo certainty effect. So we tend to prefer low risk for positives, high risk to avoid negatives.
Intriguing.
Zero risk bias, which is a similar kind of thing, right? So this is the preference for reducing a small risk to zero over a greater reduction in a larger risk. So if I gave you the choice between, and this is kind of where insurance and stuff like that often kind of fits in. So if you could say, okay, Andy, you know, on a mobile phone contract and insurance, I can, you know, take away the risk, right? So say that you've got a 50% chance of something going wrong and I can reduce that to 40. That's a 10% reduction in risk, right? And that's kind of one environment versus it's a 10% risk, take it down to zero. Still a 10% reduction, right? The reduction in risk is the same. But everyone, given those two choices, would prefer the one to take it down to zero risk. So that's kind of, you know, again, an interesting pattern and weirdness and quirk to human behavior that everyone would wants to reduce, you know, money back guarantees and that type of thing. That they'd rather have a money back guarantee than a guarantee of a 50, you know, even if the, you know, the difference is bigger and, you know, the reduction in risk is bigger. People prefer to reduce risk to zero given an equal choice between the two there. There's also the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Now, that does really does sound like an embarrassing condition.
Well, basically, and this is really, and I think this will affect a lot of people in you know, internet marketing podcast listeners here. So this is the tendency of unskilled individuals to suffer from illusionary superiority and mistakenly rating their ability much higher than average. And the opposite effect of that, which is that people who are, so basically people who are rubbish at stuff think they're better than average, and people who are better than average tend to think that they're average, if you see what I mean. So
why is that?
It's bizarre. I mean, the way that I often, when I'm talking about this in a room, I kind of, you know, say there's 40 people in a room and I say, okay, hands up who thinks they're a better than average driver.
I bet most of the hands go
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and like 70-80% of hands go up. And it's like, well, that is impossible, right? Because like 50% of people have to be above average and 50% have to be below average. You know, and it's that type, you know, that's kind of a jokey version of this. But there's what, you get this a lot. So someone who knows a little bit about SEO will be supremely confident in their ability to do SEO. Someone who knows a lot about SEO will maybe be a bit less certain of themselves. And
is
the same
because,
in every
is
kind
this
of the, well.
It's because of the difference between knowing what you don't know and not yeah. knowing what you don't know.
Exactly that. And kind of just be aware of this when you're dealing with, you know, third parties. Sometimes people are absolutely certain of what they know, perhaps aren't the best people to deal with. So there's someone, if you ask someone, you know, can you work with me a project, and they're 100% certain it's going to be successful, they're the people you want to be concerned about. You want to be the people who are aware of the risks, aware of the downside. And that's kind of down to the Dunning-Kruger effect. It's also the kind of false consensus, right? And this is the tendency that pretty much everyone makes, that they tend to overestimate how many other people agree with them, right? So if you kind of were to, and kind of this is typically kind of done in kind of political environments. So, you know, if there's a potentially contentious political decision, I'm not going to kind of go into any, but you say, okay, how many people agree with you on that decision? False consensus effect is people tend to dramatically overestimate the number of people who share the same opinion of them. And you'll get that in design decisions all the time, right? So if you ask someone, how many people, you know, if I give you two potential designs and you say, well, I prefer this one, how many people do you think would also prefer that one? And, you know, you will say, I don't know, 80% of people will think that's a better decision. There's a tendency that people have, false consensus effect. And so if ever you've got to make a decision that's based on judgment and aesthetics and those types of things, understand you will overestimate how likely people are to agree with you. And how do you deal with that? You test things. You know, you provide a testing environment, but as we talked in the previous episode, be aware of the experimenter's bias, because you will probably find data that will support your point of view as well.
Okay.
And our final couple here, and we've talked about these before, but I will cover them again because kind of I think within the context of the other patterns are important. So this is social proof, and this is the tendency that people assume that the actions of other people reflect the correct behavior in any given situation. So if lots of other people have made a decision, we will assume that that's the correct decision.
With some of the crowds,
exactly.
Yeah, we did talk about EOS, we talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and
yes.
I won't do this. In
the, oh, yes.
The same
yes.
with loss
These
aversion.
Are the familiar ones, loss aversion.
And that's
yes.
kind of the disutility of giving up an object is greater than the utility associated with acquiring it. Which kind of comes down to the fact that someone would prefer, you know, in terms of the value, the emotional impact, the utility, and it's about, you know, double as well. So the losing a fiver, the disutility of that is about equal in utility to getting a tenner. Right, so people hate losing stuff. So whenever you're phrasing offers, whenever you're talking about features and benefits and all that sort of thing, talk about what some people lose by not going with you rather than what perhaps they necessarily gain by being with you. And finally, anchoring, which we've talked about loads of times on the show, but that's the tendency to rely heavily or too heavily on an anchor point or a past reference on one trait of a piece of information when making decisions. So that's where it kind of, like if I have, you know, a price list of a bottle, you know, a price list of wine, there's three options. One's 100, one's 50, one's 25. If I've got the £100 one there, people are more likely to choose the £50 bottle of wine than the 25 bottle of wine than if I had 50, 50 and 25. You know, and that's just kind of like that high anchor point in terms of references has a quite a big impact on how people kind of look at things. But we've talked about that in previous episodes. But hopefully there's a few ideas that you can go off and explore on these weird, peculiar, you know, traits to how people behave that if you understand, potentially you can, you know, do your marketing online a little bit easier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carvey Newman. Do we know what we're going to do in the next episode?
I think we're going to, it's recorded on a different day, so I might change my mind between now and then. But the plan is that we're going to be talking about 7 frequently asked SEO questions.
Fantastic.
And of course, the answers to them.
Yeah. Right, well, that'll be good. So thank you very much, Mr. Calvin Newman.
And thank you, Andy White.
And we'll be back next time on Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at...
sitevisibility.com.
Well done, Mr. Newman.
I
well
know
done.
The web address.
See you next time, folks.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website, and if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.